This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast,
the minisode.
Yes.
This is where we're going to review shit.
Yep, because we're really opinionated. But this is like, you know, a listener choice one because you guys voted on it.
Yeah, we went on Instagram and put up a poll and a bunch of people voted. And you voted that what we would be reviewing this week is I Love You, Now Die, The Commonwealth versus Michelle Carter, the newest documentary that just came out.
Which, to start off.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Also, I chose that one and Sarah chose the other one. Okay. And I won, so thanks, guys.
Can we be honest? I wanted that one, but yeah, you had already chosen it.
I figured that's what happened because I figured, like, since it's just, it had just come out,
yeah, we both, like, it's really so relevant. To
do it. Yeah. It's really cool. So before we start talking, we have to write it.
We have to rate it.
Yes. On a scale of 1 to 10 knives.
You go first because I'm always very
different.
Different, yeah. I am a critic.
I am gonna go with 9 knives. Sarah hated it. I can already see it in her face.
I'm gonna go with 9 knives.
Oh, really?
I liked
it. The face you made, I was like, oh god, she fucking hated it.
But wonderful. Okay, I agree. I did like it. There were some things that I will talk about.
Yeah.
Which are not really the fault of the documentary, just some things that happen.
Yeah.
But the fault of the documentary, the first thing that I am so angry about is that the documentary is fucking called I Love You, Now Die. And that was not one of the, like, a single one of the text messages that she sent to him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was kind of the point, though, because they, like, said in the second one that, like, people on the internet were saying that she texted things like that to him, and I think that's why they named it that.
It's just, like, you know when you wait for the title of the movie to be said in the movie?
Yeah, so you can, like, hit the person next to you, like, they just said the name of the movie.
Yeah.
So, first off, I Love You, Now Die is directed by someone named Aaron Lee Carr. And I was reading, and she has done documentaries on, she did something else. It's not super important, but she did another, like, true crime one, basically. Okay. So I thought that was cool. And I thought that some of it was really slow. She's so cute. Oh, my God. You should look at a picture of her, but this is her.
Oh, she is cute.
The article lied. It looks like she just did At the Heart of Gold inside the U.S. gymnastics scandal. Oh, no, that was...
Okay, yeah.
So, just to give you the basics on what this is about other than just, like, being about the case, which I thought was really, really cool and why I liked it so much, was it's 2 hours, and the first hour is from the prosecution, and the second is the defense.
Yes.
Which I loved how they laid it out, personally. I thought that was really cool. How did you feel about it?
I did like the way that they did that.
Yeah.
And I still felt it was a little biased against her, even with the opinion of the defense.
Yeah.
I still felt that they showed a lot more of the prosecution side and arguments and stuff rather than the defense, but I do like the way they laid it out.
I just have to say one thing.
Yes.
I'm kind of glad the defense attorney wasn't on more because I hated her defense attorney. I hated his accent.
Yes. See, okay.
Because it was so thick. And when he was talking, he wasn't talking, like, in legal terms. He was like, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, no, we don't know what the fuck you're saying. You're the defense attorney.
What bothered me so much was when he, because, okay, they're from Massachusetts.
Yes.
When he would say Michelle Carter, it sounded like he was saying Michelle Connor because he would say Michelle Carter.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know that people have different accents and dialects and stuff, but, like, when your accent is so strong, for some reason, I just can't take you seriously as a lawyer.
Yeah, like, I know that realistically I shouldn't have been so upset by his accent, but to me, he kind of felt like a cartoon human of a person.
A little bit.
And I just, it was very distracting, but I mean, it's like clips from the actual case, so you can't really help it.
Yes. So, I just wanted to say, there was a person throughout the whole thing that was a news reporter, and I'm trying to find his.
I think it might be Jesse Barron.
Maybe. But I liked him. I think he had some, like, for a reporter, he had some good stuff to say, and the way he said it was really intellectual.
Yeah. I also kind of felt like he was biased. I don't know. I felt like a lot of the people, yeah, it was Jesse Barron.
Okay.
A lot of, like, I don't want to keep skipping ahead to the defense because that's the one that, like, to me stuck out the most.
Okay.
But, like, everyone that they had speak was kind of biased. Like, the doctor for the defense
was very biased towards
her. I was like, if they don't get him off the fucking stand right now. Like, yes. he did not do anything good for Michelle Carter.
No.
He just sat on the stand calling her fucking crazy and literally saying she's insane.
Yes.
And the thing that I did really like that Jesse Barron said was, like, she's a teenage girl. Like, what did he say? He was like, of course she's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Like, she's a teenage girl, and she's, like, going through all of this puberty and stuff, and, like, and she's depressed, and all of this.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know about you, but this movie, or not movie, but documentary, actually, like, made me kind of feel more sympathetic for her.
Yes, at the end, like, I was having issues with it loading, and so, like, every 10 minutes, I had, like, a couple minutes to stop, and I would watch it with my boyfriend. And so I, like, towards the end, when they were talking about how crazy she is and, like, her almost, like, fantasy world, I was like, I can relate to that because in high school, I fucking craved attention and did what I wasn't gonna fucking try and have someone kill themselves, but I was an attention whore.
Yeah.
And, like, no matter where I could get attention from, I would take it.
And I might end up cutting all of this out. Yes. Who knows? But when they started talking about how, like, their relationship was unhealthy and abusive.
And what he was saying to her.
Right. I started to understand more because I've been in that situation. Yes. Because he, to me, he was mentally ill. But much like my ex, who I'm referring to, threatened to kill themselves for attention and, like, would hurt themselves to make me feel bad for not, like, doing what they wanted and, like, paying enough attention to them. And he was doing the same thing to her. And at, like, some point, I kind of was like, she just wants that to end. She doesn't know how to get out of this relationship.
He's beating her down.
Yeah, and she wants it to end. She wants to stop sobbing and freaking out, thinking that he's killed himself when he won't respond. And then he didn't. Like, I've actually been through that. Yeah. So when they started saying that, I was like, honestly, it makes a lot of fucking sense.
Yeah.
Because she's a teenage girl who doesn't know how to get out of this relationship, clearly doesn't know how to have relationships in general.
Yeah, because she had never had one before.
Yeah, or, like, even the when they called her friends, quote-unquote, to the stand, like, they all thought she was kind of weird because she didn't know how to hang out and communicate and stuff like that. So I ended up feeling kind of bad for her. That's probably a very unpopular opinion because, like, as you saw, the people who they interviewed anytime on the streets were like, she's fucking terrible and deserves to die.
Well, and also, like, so, like, something that I wrote down in here is that when I first heard about it, when it was happening, you know, the media basically just covered saying she told him to kill himself and he killed himself.
Yeah.
It didn't go into the fact that they were both depressive, that they both at one point were suicidal, that like she tried to help him, that he tried to help himself, that he was abusive, that
yeah,
all this shit. They never fucking met up.
Yeah.
Lorna just crawled out from under the chair like a fucking zombie coming up from the dead.
She's so weird. I love that. But
starting with the beginning of the documentary.
Yeah, so sorry. Just got off on a tangent. The beginning of the documentary.
I like how they opened up with a scene from the trial that like, 2-minute scene basically gave you the whole summary and, like, the whole what is going to happen in this documentary.
Like, their opening statements or the text?
The opening statements. Okay.
Yeah.
So I liked that because it basically was like, this is what we're doing. This is why we're here. This is what happened.
Yeah.
And that was all like within the first minute or two of mm-hmm. the documentary.
Yeah. It really laid everything out for you, which I really enjoyed. This documentary was like very straightforward, but mm-hmm. in a good way.
Yes.
Like, including all of the text messages, like having those on the screen almost constantly throughout the entire thing was very effective.
The thing about the text messages, though.
Yes.
I had to read them out loud to my boyfriend because he couldn't read them. Because
he's not a fast reader.
Well, no. Well, that, but also the background was so distracting because they had like flashing lights and stuff on the background.
Mm-hmm.
And also like, the text was in a white bubble, but it was, like, a light gray color. Yeah. Like, they could have made it black, and it would have made it so much easier.
It was probably, like, trying to fit their aesthetic, because it was also, like, always over, like, boat scenes and, like, very Massachusetts scenes.
But just, like, the way that they set it up made it really difficult to read. Like, there were times where we had to pause it and read it, because they did do a long text, but only showed it for 3 seconds or whatever.
Yeah. I did take, like, a couple of notes, so, this was, like, you can actually tell the way that they set up this, like, having the prosecution first and the defense last. They set you up to fully believe the prosecution, only to have the defense come in and, like, change your point of view, because these are my notes when it's just the prosecution. There's a part where, like, she's telling him different ways he can kill himself,
mm-hmm.
and she says, just drink bleach or hang yourself or stab yourself, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck, Michelle? This does not look good for you, honey.
And so I wrote a couple notes, too, and, like, my first one is when they'd have a recording of her interview right after he died, and she's like, my note was her interview. She's a fucking liar saying she thought that it would maybe happen, that maybe he would kill himself when she told him to kill himself and she knew and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're fine. And then something that happened that I didn't know either was that she foregoes a jury of her peers,
mm-hmm.
which was probably the best thing she could have done, because a jury of her peers probably would have, like, tried to put her, like, for involuntary manslaughter. I don't think you can get the death penalty, but they would have gotten her whatever was closest to the death penalty if it was a jury of her peers.
Yeah, because the thing about this case was they weren't deciding whether she was in the wrong and whether she was morally guilty. It was whether they broke a law or not.
Yes.
Because freedom of speech and this and that. So they were trying to decide whether she was reckless and endangerment to him,
mm-hmm.
and whether she actually broke a law.
Right. Which was a very interesting, like, case, because have, like, interviews with people on the street, like they do man mm-hmm. on the street type stuff. And you have the people who are like, yeah, what she did is wrong, but she didn't break a law.
Yeah.
She shouldn't go to jail for it.
They had both points of view.
Yeah. And I actually wrote down that quote that guy said. Wrote down, the prosecution says she did it for attention, which it kind of seems like she did. And the reporter from Esquire says it's the perfect way to frame a teenage girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all that people have an opinion of teenage girls is that they're just, like, manipulative for attention.
Yeah.
Which she could have very well done some of it for attention, like this text afterwards trying to get attention from her friends.
And the, like, she tried it out beforehand, before he actually killed himself, with her friends texting them, being like, I think he killed himself, to see what their reaction would be.
Yeah.
During the whole thing, I wrote it about the first part, but during the whole thing, you hear only from his family,
mm-hmm.
and, like, his, not even friends, but, like, his family and his side a lot more than you hear from the defense.
Mm-hmm. In the first part?
Basically in the whole thing, okay. Because in the second part, you see a lot more of the trial.
Yeah.
And less of, like, personal accounts. Like,
yeah.
I know it said at the end that, like, her parents and her friends, like, declined comment on the documentary, but, and it's not their fault. I just wish that you could see what they were going through or what they thought about it.
Yeah, but I mean, if you can't get anyone, you can't have that.
Yeah, it's not their fault. It's just something that I wish happened. Yeah.
The part that made me sad was, like, when they had those three girls come in and basically be like, no, we weren't actually friends with her. Mm-hmm. She just, like, wanted to be friends with us. And I was just like, damn.
So rude, yeah. Like,
they really came in just to be like, nah, she didn't have any friends. It felt sad to me.
Yeah. And, like, during the first part, you see this video that he makes.
Yeah.
And it's him talking about the fact that he knows that he has depression and anxiety, and it's greatly affecting his life. But during this video, you kind of see that he's trying to help himself.
Yeah.
And then, like, again, that all changes when the defense happens, but during the prosecution, you're painted this beautiful picture of him.
Yeah. Except when they were showing that video, I kind of, like, he has these weird little things he does, and I could tell, I was like, he's kind of a weird guy.
Yeah.
Like, we all are, but just, like, some of the things he would say, I'm just like, what are you talking about,
crazy.
My guy?
Yeah.
But I liked the video, but when the defense comes in and you, like, hear more about his actual life,
mm-hmm.
because not everyone is perfect. Neither yes. person on either side of this is perfect. Someone just died, and that's the unfortunate part, so it's really easy to paint someone who dies as a martyr mm-hmm. in any case.
The prosecution was basically just using the text messages and reading them out loud. Yeah. But, you know,
it
they
has
were
an emotional effect.
Oh, definitely. So, but they were skipping over some of the ones that would put him under the bus.
That's how that works, though.
Yeah.
Like, the defense is going to show the ones painting her in a good light, and prosecution's going to show the ones painting him in a good light.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of crazy. And they did leave out, like, some stuff, the prosecution, that they, I didn't write any of it down, naturally, but they point out in the defense, like, they should have mentioned a couple of things in the prosecution, and they didn't, and there was a couple of wrongful doings there. But, like we've said several times by now, the second part is basically from, like, the defense perspective, but the only witness, or not witness, but the only person that they interview during the defense is the Esquire reporter and the doctor. Those are the only two talking head interviews I recall from the second part. And I think they, like, had that one woman reporter pop in, like, once or something.
Yeah,
but she didn't have a lot to say.
No.
So
the doctor, do you want to start with the doctor?
I would love to start with the doctor.
Go for
it. Because I wrote down something that he said.
Okay.
And he is talking about how she's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
She's an insane person. She is literally crazy. Words from the doctor. And then he makes a joke and he goes, well, I certainly wouldn't want to date her next.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I remember that.
Who the fuck hired this man?
When he said that, because that was towards the beginning.
Yeah.
I I didn't realize that she was that he was the defense doctor. I thought that, like, he was the prosecution doctor.
Yeah, and, like, on the stand, which I'm pretty sure he's, like, a trial doctor. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to go into trials specifically to talk about doctor things. And when the prosecution started interviewing him, his only response to any question is, she's crazy. He didn't answer a single question.
He was just,
But he wouldn't, like, defend anything. He was just, did she do this? Yep. Did she do this? Yep. But, like, you literally are talking about how these SSRIs are affecting the way that she is living her life, but will not say that at any point. Like, he was very frustrating to me. Yes. And I feel like if they had a better doctor on the stand, then it would have helped. But they also did kind of point out they had two other doctors say that they would never use the defense that they were using with the SSRIs.
Yeah.
And I think the defense could have gone with something different than the medicine made her, in like, temporarily insane.
Definitely.
Because I think that there were better options. Like, even just talking about him being abusive and then being worked. In an unhealthy relationship, and she, as a teenage girl, thought that was her only way out, would have worked far better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Like, or even, like, you know, they were star-crossed lovers, or the whole Romeo and Juliet thing.
Yeah, which there's, like, a literal text where he asks her to be Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
And she says, don't they die at the end? And she said, fuck that.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of ironic.
The thing that Jesse Borden brought up.
Mm-hmm. Which thing? He brought up several
things. Well, I'm about to say. About Glee.
Yes.
So, like, she's a little bit sociopathic or psychotic or whatever. But she's also pretty delusional. And I feel like when he said that she's kind of living in a fantasy world, like, she idolized Lea Michele and, like, and her character in Glee and in real life. And then when Lea Michele's boyfriend on the show and in real life died, like, I think that just, like, popped in her head because she saw all this attention and she was like, well, this happened and it can happen to me and the same outcome would work. Like,
yeah.
It was just, like, really weird to me. Like, it made me think that she was trying to live in this fantasy world.
I kind of disagree. I think that she really, like, loved Glee. But like you said, I think that she was a sociopath. And instead of, like, knowing how to actually gain attention from people by having emotion, she used the emotion that she saw other people use.
Okay.
Because, like, the big thing with Michelle Carter, another reason people hated her, is because she cannot control her fucking face.
Yes, she has
her trial.
A bitch face, and she has a stank face.
She makes a stank face because I think she genuinely can't process the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the only time she cries is when she is sentenced.
Yeah.
That's the only time she cries. And I feel like she saw, like, she did, I think she was kind of, like, fantasy world to an extent. But I don't think that she, because the way the reporter was framing it was that she told her boyfriend to kill himself so she could live Lea Michele's life. And I don't think she was that delusional. Like, I don't think it would have the same impact. Maybe. I don't know. But, like, just from my point of view, I think she, like, just genuinely didn't know how to, like, gain people's attention with emotion and was like, this actress fucking gets me every time I watch Glee.
Yeah. Do you want to talk kind of about, like, the end and the sentencing, or do you have other things to say?
No, not really. I have one final thought for the very end.
Okay. Let you save that.
Okay, yeah. Just remind me, because I will forget.
So, about the sentencing, I paused it mm-hmm. right before the judge ruled.
Yeah.
Or the verdict, not the sentencing, but the sentencing, but the verdict.
Right.
I paused it and I told Corey my exact opinion.
Yeah.
And
which is?
The judge then said something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
And my opinion was that when he was in the truck and she, like, when she told him to go kill himself and this and that, and yeah. he was driving to the Kmart and started out, that, yeah, it was morally wrong. It was fucking disgusting what she did.
Yeah.
There's no law breaking.
Right.
But once he was in the truck and the carbon monoxide had been working,
and he's, she told him to get back in.
And he got out.
Yeah.
So at that point, he is not in the right state of mind
mm-hmm.
because he knows it's working, but that fucks with your head. Like,
yeah,
like he's basically inebriated, and her telling him to get back in is like coercing an inebriated person.
Right.
And that's where
the law was broken.
The law was broken, and it was manslaughter because he was not in a sound state of mind, and she knew that, and she was reckless and endangered him.
Yeah.
Like, because he was going to do anything she said.
And, like, with that being said, I think, genuinely, the only reason she told him to get back in the car was because she had already texted her friend saying he was missing.
Yeah.
Like, I genuinely think she didn't want to backtrack and be seen as the liar once again because her friends knew that she made shit up. And I think that she was just like, if he doesn't fucking go through with this, what am I going to do? And, like, was also not in the right state of mind. It was just, like, not inebriated, definitely, yeah, under carbon monoxide. Just, but, like, she was just herself, in that yeah. fucking setting and was like, what the fuck am I going to do?
It's going to happen. And,
yeah.
And I wish that, obviously, there was some way we could get the, you know, hour and a half of calls that they made while this was happening.
Yeah.
And while, you know, she fucking sat there and listened to him die.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we can't get that. Right. And also, just a little side note, I think it was fucked up that she, like, tried to do this charity baseball thing and wouldn't fucking hold it in his hometown.
Yeah. I did write that down in, like, a part. I don't know why I'm defending her so much because, like, I think what she did was fucked up. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I've been in a similar situation. But, like, at the end of the day, I wouldn't tell him to get back in the car.
Yeah, like,
mean? And I wouldn't help him plan his own death.
Yeah, there's times where he says he's going to kill himself, and you ignore him because you're over that behavior, but you're not going to tell him to fucking do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and, like, for me, I started calling his mom and telling his fucking mom that he was threatening to kill himself. Like, there's things Good, that yeah. you can do, and that's where she was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, like, I just don't think that she deserves 20 plus years in prison, which she doesn't get,
yeah.
which is fine, but
I do think she deserved more than she got, mm-hmm. but 20 years is a lot because yeah. she was also 17. And something that Corey brought up was, if this happened when she was 17, why is she being charged as an adult? And I kind of told him that, like, that's basically the judge's opinion, because when we watched the documentary about the Central Park Five, he charged them all as adults, even though they're 14
he
years old.
He only charged a 16-year-old as an adult.
You're right. Never yeah. mind. Cut that. Cut that whole thing. But he asked me why they charged her as an adult.
And I don't think they did, because he said during his sentencing that because you were only 17 years old at the time of the crime, I'm giving you 7 years.
Yeah, but she didn't get any time in, like, juvie.
Yeah, because she's past the yeah. juvie age. Like, the difference in the Central Park 5 case
was they were young.
Yeah, it was, like, that they were really young. But, like, by the time she actually got sentenced, she was not in jail in the years between yes. 17 and 20. Mm-hmm. She was out with her family. So she never really, like, she got less time, essentially, because she was juvenile at the time of the thing.
Yeah.
She didn't get any juvie, but you're not old enough to be, you're too old to be in juvie. I will say, though, that fucking judge was really playing, like, And we'll be back after this commercial break type with, like, his sentencing, because you can watch her face and see where she's like, oh, shit, he's going to find me guilty. And then he says, but, and she goes, oh, shit, he's not going to find me guilty. And then he's like, but again. And then he's like, I find your ass guilty. So the judge was living his best
life.
He was really playing up the crowd. He was going back and forth. On their tippy toes. I thought that was kind of funny. Oh, yeah. The only thing I wanted to say is when she cut her hair super fucking short, it was so cute. She looked like Cara Delevingne.
So, okay. I'm going to be a terrible person and be like, the entire time I was like, her forehead is so big. Which it is. Whatever. I have a giant forehead is the thing. I have a giant forehead. But then, like, when she started doing her eyebrows, she did them so far. Like, it was fine that they were bold. I like a bold brow.
Yeah.
But they were so close together. Like, there was barely any room in between her eyebrows. And it bothered me so much.
Yeah.
But
her outfits were always very cute.
That's what I told. I was like, Corey, this girl's outfits
are on point.
Yes.
So, overall, she is a bad person for what she did, but the original paint, like, story that was painted was not the full picture.
Yes.
And I am very appreciative of the opportunity to see the other side, and people can say it's biased, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it was that biased, personally, because there are some very biased interviews. Just go fucking watch the one about the staircase. You'll be infuriated if you're me. That's a fucking biased, like, documentary if you ever want to watch one.
See, I think the only reason why I think it's biased is because she didn't really have very many people defending her.
But I think that's because all of them declined. So it doesn't, that doesn't inherently make it biased. Biased is, like, if you are trying to push your agenda.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that the filmmaker, like, definitely it is happening because you literally can't create anything without bias.
Yeah.
But, like, I think that she did a pretty decent job of being unbiased. There was a lot more of the prosecution.
That's just what makes me think, because you see so much more of it. You're just like, oh, well, this is the way that they're leaning. But that's because they had to do that, because no one else would comment.
Yeah. But overall, I really liked it. I thought it was really cool. And
yeah, it was, I mean, it was really informative, and it taught me a lot of things about the case that I definitely didn't know.
Because that case was one, like, when it came out and the headlines were so inflammatory and angering that I just didn't want to read it. Like, I remember reading one and they misquoted, like, they said the thing where she was like, die now or something like that, which she never actually said. They've combed through years of texts and she never said.
And the thing that gets me every time is she wouldn't have gotten to or had to go to jail or anything because she didn't text him that she told him to get back in the truck. She did it over the phone.
Yeah.
But that she told her friend that she told him to get back in the truck. Yeah. And that is the one thing that incriminated her.
Yeah. If she never would have texted that, no one would have ever had to have known.
Yep.
Because, but, like, that also to me kind of shows, it's hard because I don't know if she actually felt genuine guilt or if she just wanted attention again.
Yeah,
it's because I think that she is kind of, I get them confused all the time and people are probably going to kill me, but sociopath or psychopath. Like, she's definitely on that spectrum.
Yeah, definitely. Like, she is lack of emotion and pretty narcissistic, which is textbook sociopath.
Yeah. So, but I liked it.
Yeah, it was good and informative.
Yeah. Everyone should check it out if you haven't already. You probably have.
And if you haven't, then all the spoilers are here.
Yeah.
Skip the whole thing.
Don't listen to these.
Yeah, right? Watch it first if you're going to listen to a review about it.
Yeah. We probably should have said this at the top, but
oh, well.
Get fucked. Just kidding. All right, guys. We will see you in 2 weeks because we do these every 2 weeks. And next, should we tell them or should we, like, keep it a surprise.
I'm sure I feel like we should tell them since it just came out. And so in 2 weeks, it's going to be kind of, like, I feel like kind of old news. Yeah. But
basically, Mindhunter season 2, because fuck yes.
Yes, because we watched the season 1 and we loved it when it first came out. And season 2 just came out and we're super fucking excited for it. And Morgan's already watched the whole thing.
I did. I finished the whole thing and it's great.
And I am about to start it probably tomorrow. Nice. But yeah, it's going to be fun.
Because Jonathan Groff. That's all I have to say.
Ended on that.
All right, guys. Keep on binging. Bye.
See ya.